Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 277 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. It's getting colder, but nice indoors. So, you know.
It is extremely cold, but obviously we're just not used to it yet. It's going to get colder.
Yes, yes. But, you know, locked away indoors anyway, so, you know, who cares?
Yes.
So, what have you been up to in the last few weeks?
It's actually been quite quiet. I know that, obviously, we've just entered the second lockdown. We're 2 weeks in now as we're recording this, and we've got another 2 weeks to go. I haven't actually been watching as much as I thought. I know when I was checking my notes, I was like, oh, I haven't actually watched. I've been watching bits and pieces here and there and doing a lot of the weekly satire, like Have I Not Got News For You and Mock the Week. So once that's out of the way, I haven't completed much. I finished The Boys about a week and a half ago, season two. I was a bit slow. I did it week by week, and then a few weeks fell in between a couple of episodes, and in the end I had to binge the last two together just so I could be up to date. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I was so shocked about the character arc of one particular character. Not for people who still haven't watched it, I won't spoil. I really liked this character at the start, and I remember in episode two, what a brilliant addition to the cast. How shocked was I as it sort of evolved? But I liked how they evolved that story and where they could possibly go as they move forward. So I'm very much looking forward to that and the associated spin-offs that I'm hearing are in the works, which is quite exciting.
Yes.
Max. Now, I saw this advertised and I did know that they tried to broadcast one episode at the start of March, I think, or April.
Yeah.
And they held it back and put it out.
Yeah. It was first broadcast. The first episode went out on E4, got horrendous numbers, basically because it was right at the start of lockdown and people were a bit kind of dazed and confused about exactly what they were kind of doing and watching. And, you know, it was just a very weird time. Yeah. And they E4 pulled a load of stuff. And one of the things it pulled was Max, and it then resurfaced on Channel 4 this week. So,
I didn't dislike it. I didn't rave about it. It was ample viewing. I could see what he was trying to do. He plays a lot on the popular culture of like the record industry, and he's got some really good casts in there. And actually, I may have just not been in the right frame of mind to be receiving it, but I think it did well. And I'm not sure if it's in commission for a second season. I can see where they can go with it. He's a very dislikable character. They've got some nice little subplots going along the lines with his adopted son and his sort of the manager who comes in to try and look after him. And, you know, it's harmless. I'm very much on the fence. I'm not loving it. I'm not hating it. It was okay.
Yeah, okay. That's not the sort of rave review I suspect they were hoping for. But I mean, I haven't actually started watching this yet. It didn't massively appeal to me, in all honesty. I have a feeling this is going to be one of those E4, Channel 4 shows that doesn't make it out of one season, unless it played really well because it aired in the US.
Did it do the US first during this first lockdown and then has come back to us?
Yeah, it did. It went out on Hulu over there. I mean, if it did well on Hulu, maybe it will get a second season. But yeah, I mean, it was a British-made show. So.
And you have to know the UK music industry, in my opinion, for some of it.
Right.
You have to sort of know some of the background to like our boy band systems and things like that. And anyway, it's... it's Much of a Muchness. The next series I finished was Unsolved Mysteries, the second half. I enjoyed every episode apart from I didn't complete one of them, and that was the flood episode based in Japan.
That's where I dropped out because I haven't gone back and watched the rest of it. I'm glad you've said that because that one really didn't grip me at all, and I was finding that was
25
hard work.
Minutes in and there just wasn't anything, like, so I stopped it. I took about a week to go back to it, and in the end I thought, you know what, I'm not going to go back and continue watching that one. I'm going to move on to the next one.
I think that's probably what I'll do.
And actually the last ones were absolutely fine, but that one really didn't hit home. And I know they did it in the previous episode with one based in France, but that one was much more gripping. And I get what they're trying to do, the international, but there was just nothing driving me to want to work out where they were going with the story. But good sort of lovely documentary, the sort of stuff I really like, and, you know, to sit there and try and work out if you know the outcomes and things like that. So that's been really good. And the other thing I've watched, it dropped weekly on Comedy Central, was Lisa Tarbuck's Comedy Game Night, which is developed from the Hollywood Game Night, which they do in America. And they did a sort of a pilot episode last year. And I think the team captains at the time were Susan Kalman and Mickey Flanagan, or Danny Baker and Susan Kalman, something like that. And they did the pilot. And obviously, I really liked the pilot. And I was like, oh, I wonder how they're going to bring that back. And they brought it back in a COVID safe way. The new team captains were Guz Khan and Sue from Mel and Sue, Sue Perkins. And I really enjoyed it. And it was, sounds really odd, but it was my sort of lunchtime program. So I, when I'd finish work and go out into the lounge, I'd put it on and you could eat lunch to it and you could laugh and you could have a go at some of the games and the range of celebrity guests they had on. Now, this was 10 episodes and each episode had to have six guests, three for Sue's team and three for Guz's. You had 60 celebrities from a huge range of industries. And some of them were just not the normal crowd. Like, you would never see them on a panel show. And they obviously agreed. And they were, they came across really well, some of them. And you just think, I've never, you know, you've not done the same stream of panel shows that you all do. And you can turn on and always see a Tom Allen, or you can always turn on and see Nathan Caton, or they're always the same sort of people. These were new people, and actually it was really good, and I really hope that comes back. And I don't, you know, they did it COVID safe, and so you could see if they could do it non, you know, in the normal situation if the vaccine all goes through. A very good show.
I missed that completely, but that does sound like quite a fun one. Pointless has become my eating show.
As a former Pointless contestant, Dave.
Were you really?
I don't watch it anymore, but yes, I used to watch it.
I never knew that.
And then I appeared on it back in 2012, I think, 2012. Wow. Yeah, and then I didn't really watch it after that. I get occasional episodes of Celebrity Pointless I'll watch on a Saturday, but yeah. It's put me off from watching that again.
How well did you do?
We got to the final, but we didn't succeed in the final. So, and I'm not going to tell you what my specialist subject is, so that'll embarrass me.
So you got to the final in that you have a Pointless trophy.
I do have a Pointless trophy.
It's on my book, yes.
Can I have that in my bio now on Geek Town, everybody?
Absolutely. I shall add that to your bio of Gray being Pointless. Yes.
Yeah. I was also on The Weakest Link back in the day, so I'm a real sort of legend. This is going off key. There you go. There's my little celebrity status to it as well.
Amazing.
And the final thing I'll talk about, I finished just this week, was FBI. I really fell in love with this episode, I think, this season. I started watching it just in lockdown. It was something that just came on in the background. I was like, oh, I haven't watched this. I like an odd procedural. And then I really got sort of enthralled in the stories between, like, Maggie and OA, who are the lead characters. And then Maggie was getting bigger and bigger because the actress in real life fell pregnant during the second season. And then so you get really invested in, like, the actors and the characters. And then in the last episode, which you could tell was cut short because of COVID, they attempt to do this sort of mini crossover with someone from Chicago PD. They bring a Chicago PD character in because it's all part of the same universe.
Yes.
And, you know, it was really good. It wasn't a classic end of season episode, and you know the beginning of the episode will have to cover Maggie's return from, we all know it's from maternity leave, but you know she went deep undercover for a project, as they do. But no, absolutely harmless procedural fun. It's got me watching the FBI Most Wanted as well. Really enjoyed that, and I'm always a fan of a procedural. So that's basically what I've been watching, sort of ticking along some of the programs, picked up a couple of new things. Friday Night Dinner on Netflix, I'd never watched that when it was broadcast. And and that's about me. So Dave, what have you been doing? Hopefully you've had more success than me.
Well, kind of a couple of new things. Still watching The Crown, which I just got to the Fagin episode, which is the guy that broke in to Buckingham Palace and got into the bedroom of the Queen in the sort of early 80s. That's fascinating, that episode. I thought that was brilliantly done. I know this season has come under some criticism for the way that it's messed around with the timeline a bit, and you know how they've conflated events together and that sort of stuff for dramatic effect, but I'm fine with all that. I mean, there were things that happened around that time. That particular episode features this guy who, you know, it's the middle of Thatcher's sort of austerity measures, and he's trying to get some answers to some questions he has about the way that society is being run, and he goes to his MP and he goes to other people's, and eventually he just thinks, screw it, I'm going to go and talk to the Queen. And that seems to have been his motivation for breaking in, and he ends up in the Queen's bedroom and has a conversation with her. That episode I just thought was so brilliantly done. There's a lot of stuff as well this series, which is the Charles and Diana story, and it's interesting to seeing how they're handling that, and of course sort of Camilla lurking in the background as well. They're doing a fantastic job. I think the acting is superb. Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher is just brilliant. Really, really enjoying that series so far. It's well, well worth watching. The thing that's mainly been taking up my time this week is The Vow, which I talked a little bit about last week. I've actually now finished it, because you can get it all on demand, although it is going out weekly. I mean, what a crazy, phenomenal series that was. Have you seen any of this yet?
No, I was reading a bit about it when you sent me over the notes previously, but I hadn't heard of it. I hadn't come across it, not even sort of came across any of my Twitter or anything like that.
Really?
So, tell me more about it.
So, okay, are you aware of this group called Nixium, who are essentially a cult? It was set up by a guy called Keith Raniere and a woman named Nancy Saltzman, and it uses a system called neurolinguistic programming, which is known as NLP. And essentially what they do is it's designed as a set of courses that are sort of wrapped up in NLP as a way of improving and bettering things that you want to improve in your life. So it's marketed as improvement courses for executives, essentially. That's where it first started. So it starts out as that. The basic premise of the entire thing is, what if somebody, basically a misogynist, takes a tool like NLP and weaponizes it, and then mixes it in with the pyramid scheme. And that's what Nixium ends up becoming. Whilst there are these courses, it's one of these things where you go in and they try and get members to bring more people in. There are levels as you improve and get better, where you advance along this path, and they have these kind of scarf things that they wear that take you up to various different levels, much like the sort of thing that you hear in things like Scientology and that sort of stuff as well. Although they try to argue that it is very much based in science and not in sort of some sort of woo-woo religious stuff. The problem is, there is a group within Nixium called DOS, and that essentially was a sex cult. With, they go on to explain who they think is at the head of it and who are the people involved in it. That is the thing that got into the newspapers. The other reason why Nixium became quite well known is there were some very famous, or reasonably famous, well-known faces involved with it. The most notable one being Alison Mack, who is from...
I remember hearing her name a few months back about being involved in a cult. I didn't know it was this one at all, and I didn't even know there was a documentary on it yet. So
yeah, there's actually a couple of documentaries, but this is the sort of big HBO one. So Alison Mack, who is in Smallville, who actually was charged with some of the things that went on in the cult. So there's her. Bonnie Plessy, who was probably best known known as playing the young Aunt Beru in the Star Wars movies. Sarah Edmondson, who has been in things like Continuum and Stargate and has had a couple of other roles. Catherine Oxenberg, who wasn't involved directly, she was one of the stars of Dynasty. Her daughter India was very involved in the cult. There's various other people that had sort of tangential connections to it, like some of the other Smallville cast. Some people from Battlestar Galactica were brought in as well. And a lot of the footage that they get comes from a guy called Mark Vicente, who is Bonnie's husband, who had been involved for a very long time, actually was, I think, was the person that introduced Bonnie into it. And he was a independent filmmaker who Keith Raniere kind of latched onto and got him to shoot quite a lot of stuff inside the cult. It's publicity material. So a lot of the stuff that the documentary makers have used is stuff that was shot by Mark and various other people that within the cult, because he was in control of the things that were shot. So there are interviews directly with Keith Raniere and with Nancy and with all the people involved. And it starts off fairly slow. The first episode is sort of explaining what this organization was and what it was set up to be. And it's not until sort of towards the end of that episode that Bonnie actually raises a red flag that there is something strange going on. And then the next couple of episodes, it slowly starts to kind of snowball. And then it just hits this point where they realize they need to start removing people and getting people out and start really warning stuff about it. And it just accelerates and accelerates all the way through it. It's really fascinating. It ends in a very odd way because there is a second season of it. So you don't get, you know, I was expecting a title card of, you know, Keith Raniere was sentenced to X amount in prison. He has actually been sentenced now, but he might not have been when they finished the documentary. But I was expecting sort of title cards and that sort of being it. But it ends with a very odd sort of statement of a voicemail from Keith Raniere. And that seems to be setting up where they may go for the second season.
Did Alison Mack appear?
Yeah, she is in the footage. Alison Mack is in a lot of the footage and there are interviews to camera because she did interviews to camera for Mark, you know, talking about Nexium and stuff. So she does appear, but not talking about it in terms of the thing being a cult, because of course the people in it don't see it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, she is in it.
Where is it on the UK TV? If it's HBO Max, is it being streamed anywhere at the moment?
It is on Now TV, so you can get it on Now TV. It is also on the Sky Documentaries channel and on demand as well.
Sky Documentaries, that's probably where I need to look for it. That doesn't come up on my suggested TV programs very often, documentaries. So
No.
It does sound fascinating.
It is brilliant and it gets very bingeable as well, because as I say, it is going out weekly at the moment and I think they've just put the second episode out weekly, but you can go on and just binge your way through it. It's that has been taking up most of my week, because I was going to go back and watch more of The Crown and then I thought, oh well, just watch an episode of The Vow, and then just got massively hooked by it.
Sometimes things like that just take over, don't they?
Yeah, it's been really fascinating. I've had a couple of friends which I've suggesting it to as well, one of whom is actually a legitimate NLP practitioner, and I messaged him going, you have to watch this, I think you'll find it fascinating. It's been really interesting seeing him talking about it as well, because yeah, this is what part of what he does for a living. It's really interesting seeing those techniques used in that way, and you know, as I say, weaponizing it in some ways. It's a phenomenal documentary. It's well worth going to watch if you've not caught that. The other thing I started watching this week was For Life, which is Nicholas Pinnock following in the long tradition of stealing American actors' roles as a British actor. He plays a convict who is fighting to overturn his wrongful life conviction. To do that, he passes the bar and ends up representing other criminals in court. And it is based on a true life story as well. It's a really solid courtroom procedural. That is all on demand as well, although they are putting that out weekly. Nicholas Pinnock has got flawless American accent in it. It was like really, really quite good. That's one definitely I would recommend. Well acted, interesting group of characters that they're sort of setting up. I'm not sure how closely it sticks to the real life story of the guy and where it diverts for dramatic effect, but I think it's an interesting premise in terms of a setup and makes for a sort of different thing for a courtroom drama. So if you like procedurals, that's definitely one to watch. I think that's Sky I Witness that's going out on, but again, on all on demand and all on Now TV if you want to go and watch that as a box set. The other thing I did this week was a Zoom gig. It was my first Zoom gig, which was Boothby Graffo, who some people might know. He's a musician and also a comedian as well. So he's very, very funny. And he had Adam Hills from The Last Leg on as a guest. And the sort of original premise of him doing these online gigs was the idea of trading songs with somebody else. But then he started getting other more comedians on who aren't necessarily entirely musically inclined. I mean, Adam is slightly. It was just very funny watching the two of them for sort of an hour and a bit, just bantering backwards and forwards and trading stories. Adam was doing, as his musical contribution, national anthems to famous songs from the country. So ends on Summer of 69 to the words of the Canadian National Anthem by Bryan Adams, which is just very, very funny. But yeah, so I thoroughly enjoy him. And it was relatively cheap. It was like £10. But he has various guests on. He's had people like Stuart Lee on and various other people. So if you want like a good time and something that you can sit and watch a gig from your own home, I'd heartily recommend watching the Boothby Graffo gigs because they are brilliantly funny. And if you just Google Boothby Graffo, you'll go and find where he's doing them awake. You can buy tickets and stuff, but definitely well worth watching. Have you done any Zoom gigs since you've been in lockdown?
I got a link for the Sarah Millican one. She was doing one quite regularly with all of her comedian friends, but it just never seemed to fall on a week that I was available. And then things sort of got back to semi-normal. So they started to about to rest it and then they brought it back again just for this one. But I still haven't done one. No, I got talked into a Zoom quiz this week for the first time since forever. And I found myself doing that and I surprisingly had a good time. I was like, oh, this is actually quite good. Because, you know, the moment the quiz is over, I'm at home again, so I don't have to do that journey home.
But yes.
No, not done a gig yet. I'm hoping that I won't have to either if things sort of go in a positive direction over the next couple of months.
Yes, that would be good. I have got another one lined up, which is Bellowhead. I've done a reunion, who are a brilliant English folk band. And I'm very interested to see how that works because there's about 30 of them. So I'm really intrigued to see how they pull that together and what they've actually done for that. But I'm looking forward to that. That's on the 5th of December, I think that one is. There's still tickets out for the Bellowhead gig, I think, if you want to go and see if you can get tickets for that, if you're into that sort of stuff. But very enjoyable. There's lots of people doing these great online gigs. And it's quite nice because generally they're done on Zoom. And if they're doing the stuff live rather than a pre-recorded thing, they'll kind of see any chat messages you put up. So they're kind of responding to the audience and stuff. And it's that's quite good fun. And it also helps support these people that are really struggling at the moment because of the fact that, you know, they can't get out and do their proper gigs. So it is well worth doing if you see some online gigs. They're a great way to just spend an evening and sit and have some fun. So highly recommend it anyway. That's all the stuff we'd be doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
TV and film news this week. We start off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. It's been quite a slow week after last week's deluge of like cancellations and renewals. We've only got one cancellation this week. A fairly significant one though. Black Lightning, CW show, is coming to an end after four seasons. So that, I think, only leaves Legends and The Flash are the only two left out of the original set of shows.
Yeah, who's going to be around that table now that they set up in the last crossover?
Yeah, dropping like flies, the people out of Justice League thing that they were starting to set up, because Arrow is now gone, Supergirl is going. But I mean, they have replaced Supergirl with Lois and Superman and Lois, whichever way round that is. You've got Batwoman, but of course it's a different Batwoman, so there's her. There is talk of another show potentially coming as well, and the Painkiller spin-off that we talked about last week, that is potentially still going ahead. So I'm not sure exactly the reasoning for why they've decided that they're going to cancel this, other than I know its viewing figures hadn't been great. I know a lot of people love the show, but apparently out of all of them, that was the one where the viewing figures weren't great. So maybe it's just one of those situations where it was costing too much to do. Black Lightning also doesn't shoot with the rest of them because they all shoot in Vancouver, but I think Black Lightning shoots in Atlanta. So there may be a cost issue associated with that as well, that it is kind of on the fringes. And it may be that if they're going to have to build new sets and stuff for the Painkiller series, I suspect they may move that to Vancouver with everything else. So I don't know the exact reason for it, other than we do know that the numbers weren't particularly brilliant for that series. And maybe that was just the reason. But I mean, they're going to keep on adding and removing things as we go along, I think, for this universe. It's one of those things that the Arrowverse, the Berlantiverse, the CWverse, whatever you want to call it, that I think is going to be something that keeps going in one form or another. And they're just going to have people drop in and drop out. And in most cases, they haven't killed off characters, so people can
keep it open and
and return. So yeah, so it's a shame that that one is going, but there will be this Painkiller spin-off which will feature one of the characters from Black Lightning and maybe some of the others as well. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So that was the cancellation. No renewals, I don't think, this week. So we'll move on to the pickups, advanced air dates and coronavirus stuff. One little coronavirus update. Richard Schiff, who we mentioned last week, was in hospital with COVID, although seemed to be doing okay. He is actually out of hospital now. He seems to be over it. He did say that I realize how lucky I am. Doctors took me through endgame scenarios and it looked quite dire. His wife and son managed to stay out of hospital, but facing the reality of losing your life is abstract until you have to look it in the eye, and it's terrifying. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like it did get quite serious for him, but I'm just glad he's okay and he seems to have come through it. He's going back home now. That must be a terrifying thing, because he's not a young guy either, Richard Schiff. I'm glad he's back and he seems to be doing okay.
They're already filming though, aren't they? Are they filming like some of the medical procedure shows with a coronavirus take on it, as in like they're saying it's actively in the season?
Yeah, there is a mixture. We went through some of these actually. Good Doctor starts off with the coronavirus but then kind of moves past it. So the first couple of episodes are about the virus, and then they are moving into a sort of world after the virus. And there's a few shows are handling it slightly differently. Some shows are doing it with the virus, some shows are doing it without, some shows are completely ignoring it. I mean, obviously, if it's, you know, historical drama, or if you're on a distant planet or something like that, of course you're ignoring it. But shows that are set in reality, some of them are basing it in the pandemic, some of them are post-pandemic, some of them are pre-pandemic. So it's a wide variety you are getting it. Things like This Is Us is dealing a bit with the pandemic and stuff with Black Lives Matter. The NCIS is a sort of, depending which show you watch, you're either in the pandemic, after the pandemic, or before the pandemic. So it's been sort of interesting seeing how the various different shows that are set in present times are dealing with it. One good piece of news, Line of Duty has finished filming season 6. So that is now wrapped. Hopefully we may see that quite early in the new year. Obviously they had a bit of a delay in filming, but hopefully that will be back if they can get all the editing done fairly quickly. In terms of the US, there is a couple of interesting air dates that popped up for the US, just so you get an idea of when they're likely to return over here. The Rookie now has an air date on ABC in the US for its third season. That's back on the 3rd of January. Somebody asked me today, do we know when it's going to return in the UK? No, although it usually runs about 3 months behind the US, so that probably puts it into March. You've also got to bear in mind that there's a lot of stuff that is going out in October, November in the US, which isn't going to start over here until January. So January is going to be quite packed anyway. So my guess is a lot of the stuff that maybe is announced as starting in January might get bumped to sort of March, April. So we'll be running half of a season behind, essentially, which is it's kind of how we've always sort of run with a lot of these procedural stuff anyway. It's just because we've not had anything really start the full season because everything started so late, everything's kind of bumped by half a season, essentially. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist has also got an air date, which I'm very, very happy about on NBC.
That's, and so will Matt will be as well.
Matt will be over the moon. I adore this show as well. It was one of the best shows of the last 12 months. January 5th, that's starting on NBC. So it will be sometime after that on E4, hopefully at some point when they're sober enough to get round to scheduling it. We honestly don't know. I mean, you know how random the scheduling is on E4.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I just hope they keep it and they don't do what they've done for some shows and ignore it for a while. And then everyone asks is where they is and they're, oh, we've sold it to Channel 5.
So we don't know. I mean, they were concerned about money earlier in the year. They seem to have managed to resolve a lot of that and things seem to have leveled out for them. So hopefully we'll see them move forward with picking things up again. But we'll have to wait and see because, I mean, the scheduling at E4 has been atrocious this year and, we're just going to have to hang on and see what happens. A couple of other interesting premiere dates. Coming to America, which is the Eddie Murphy follow-up movie to Coming to America, the original. Yep. This is coming number two, America. This is being picked up worldwide by Amazon. Rather than going into theatres, it's going to be going to Amazon Prime Video on the 5th of March. I think that could be quite fun. I mean, the first movie was quite good fun. I mean, it was at the height of Eddie Murphy-ness. So that's probably, late 80s, I imagine that was?
I watched it very recently, actually. I want to say I watched it at the very beginning of the year under the premise that I knew the second one was coming. And I'm quite surprised that Netflix didn't get it because they were on a little bit of an Eddie Murphy run for a while in terms of picking up his career. But I'll be excited to see it. But it was very dated, very of its time when I watched it at the beginning of this year. It was a classic. It was really good.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. They've picked that up and it's gone to Amazon Prime Video. So that'll be the 5th of March next year that lands. Wonder Woman 1984. You might have been seeing things about it launching Christmas Day. That is in the US and it's going into cinemas on Christmas Day because that's the thing they do in America, which you might or might not realize, but going to see movies like Christmas Afternoon and The Day After Christmas, that's quite a popular thing in the US. They're launching it Christmas Day in America. They're also launching it at the same time on HBO Max for people that don't want to risk the theaters. At the moment, it's still coming out on December 16th in UK cinemas. There hasn't been any announcement about them putting it on streaming on Christmas Day or anything like that over here, so we don't know what's going to happen with that. It's a slightly weird one, but at the moment, 16th of December in UK cinemas, assuming they're open, which, judging by the announcements they've had today, it sounds like they probably will be. We'll see whether it turns up somewhere else, but at the moment, that's where you can get to see that. Pixar's Soul, which is the new Pixar movie, that is apparently landing Christmas Day on Disney Plus worldwide, so that's not getting a cinema release, that's coming to Disney Plus. And one other little thing, just as a follow-up to last week, we were talking about Wentworth Miller and his decision not to do another season of Prison Break because he wanted just to play gay characters. Daryl mentioned about the fact that he turned up in an episode of Law and Order SVU. That character is apparently turning in the second season. It's ADA Isaiah Holmes. What Daryl was talking about maybe he could come back in that show because that was a gay character. And he apparently is. So you'll be able to see Wentworth Miller in the 22nd season of Law and Order SVU, which is the one that is coming up now. So that's good news. If you're a Wentworth Miller fan, you'll be able to watch him there. In terms of bigger news stories, there was a huge amount of information that dropped out about The Walking Dead. As you know, if you're a Walking Dead fan, we have 30 episodes left of the main show before it ends for good. So that's the rest of the 10th season and the 11th season, both of which have been expanded. So the 10th season, they added 6 additional episodes, which they've announced are going out from the 1st of March. So it's around about the same sort of time where they would usually bring it back for the second half of the season, because usually it will run sort of October and then late February, early March. So what they're doing is they're running 6 episodes, which are going out on the 1st of March in the UK on Fox. So 28th of February, because there's no 29th of February next year. So the 28th of February on AMC and then 1st of March in the UK, so day after. And that will be for those 6 episodes. Then season 11 starts October-ish at the end of 2021. That's split into 3 blocks of 8. So that will be the first bit. And then there'll be another bit, which will be February, March in 2022. And there'll be another bit, which will be October 2022. So that's how they're breaking it all up. They've announced some casting for it as well for the 6 additional episodes. Robert Patrick, who you will know from Judgment Day, the Terminator 2 movie. He was in Perry Mason recently as well, and Scorpion. He he was in as well. Hilary Burton Morgan, which we mentioned a few weeks ago, he's Mrs. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, is actually going to be on screen playing his wife, and she's his real life wife. She's playing Lucille. Oki Emi Akawi is playing a character called Elijah. She's been in Cobra Kai and Greenland. If you didn't know where we left The Walking Dead, or if you've forgotten where we left them, spoilers, obviously, for anybody that isn't up to date on The Walking Dead, but they were kind of all split across the different communities. Hilltop had been pretty much destroyed. They'd abandoned Alexandria to go and prepare for this battle against the Whisperers. Alpha had been killed. They end that series by eliminating the Horde and Beta himself that they've been bringing towards them. So these six new episodes kind of pick up after the events of that, and we find themselves trying to pick themselves up after the destruction that Whisperers left behind. The years of struggle weigh upon them as the past traumas exposing their more vulnerable sides, as they question the state of humanity, the state of the collective community, and the state of their minds. Will they find the inner strength to persevere with their lives, friendship, and group intact? They've got some breakdowns of what to expect in the different episodes. First one is going to be focused on Maggie, who we saw return in what was going to be the finale before they added these. So we saw Lauren Cohen turn back up as Maggie. She's returned with a story that she's not ready to share, even when her past catches up with her. Negan's Jeffrey Dean Morgan safety is at stake once again. Daryl and Maggie fight an unseen and unknown threat. So that's the strapline for that one, which sounds kind of interesting. The second one is called Find Me, and that's an adventure for Daryl and Carol, who turns sideways though when they come across an old cabin. Takes Daryl back to the years when he left the group after Rick disappeared, and he relives the time that only Apocalypse could manifest. So you might be sort of seeing a trend with this, in that a lot of the episodes seem to be taking the characters in situations now, but it's then going back and covering gaps in their story previously. So there is going to be, I suspect, in the Maggie episode, a bit about what she got up to when she wasn't with the rest of the group. It's the same with Daryl when he kind of left the group after Rick disappeared. You've then got a story with Gabriel and Aaron as they search for food and supplies to bring back to Alexandria. Small tragedies lead to bigger tragedies as faith and broken optimism is fragmented when they're put to the ultimate test. Eugene, Ezekiel, and Yumiko and Princess are captured and separated. Princess struggles with the memories of a traumatic past and tries to escape one way or another with the help of Ezekiel. So again, that looks like it's looking back into the background of Princess. There's one called Diverged, which is Daryl and Carol again come across a fork in the road as they head their separate ways, each going into their own type of survival mode. The easiest of challenges becomes much harder. Will their individual journeys be the tipping point needed to mend their friendship, or is the distance between them permanent? Clearly not, because we've got a show coming up, which is a spin-off based around Daryl and Carol. So clearly they're going to be back together at some point. And the last episode, which is called Here's Negan, which we were talking about a few weeks ago as being the title of an actual comic. There is a one-shot, it's like a six-issue run that was called Here's Negan. So this is the background of Negan and how he got to where he got to. So Carol takes Negan on a journey, hoping to minimize the increasing tension. Negan reflects on the events that led him to this point and comes to the conclusion about his future. So that is obviously the episode which will feature his wife playing Lucille in it as well. I think it's quite interesting what they're doing with this. It's sort of because they found that they had these six additional episodes to play with, and it sounds like what they're doing is they're using it to flesh out some of the characters we know quite well, which I'm quite looking forward to as a fan of the show. You're not watching Walking Dead, do you?
No, I did stop watching it after they introduced Negan's character in the big controversial season, and I never really got back into it. Obviously, I've been keeping a slight eye on everything that's happening with it, and I've been reading a lot about what's going to be left, and so I can work out where what characters are going to survive based on spin-offs. But I have respect for it. I think they kept me hooked for, you know, 8 years. I think it was 8 years, 7 or 8 years. It was really good. But I moved on. I just had different interests, and, you know, I found different ways to be engaged. And I recently did a podcast with Matt where he introduced me to Black Summer, and it was a different way of telling the zombie story. And I really liked that. And I sort of then had regrets, like, did I leave Walking Dead too early? But I don't really want to go back now to it, even though, you know, it's coming to an end. I just think I wouldn't want to go back.
Yeah, the problem with Walking Dead is after the introduction of Negan, and Negan was a great character, and, you know, that was really really their height. And there was a couple of seasons after that where the viewership plummeted because it was just not well written. And it was like walking through mud in places. It wasn't until Angela Kang took over as showrunner after two seasons, I think, where it was like that. And then Angela Kang took over, really, really turned things around. The season where she took over was the season where she had to sort of deal with Rick leaving. But after that, it really was shot off in a slightly different direction, and just the pace picked up, and it was so much better put together. It's actually, I mean, yeah, it did drop off in quality for a couple of seasons, but it got so much better after that. And it is well worth jumping back in again. I mean, you could probably skip quite a lot of those episodes in between and still kind of get back in, maybe watch sort of episodes towards the end of Negan and the disappearance of Rick, and then sort of get back into it from that point. So you could jump a couple of seasons, I think, without missing too much if you wanted to get back into it.
I mean, something to keep at the back of my mind.
Yes, yeah. Speaking of big shows, Stranger Things have announced 8 new cast members for season 4. They're really going all out. There's a huge amount of new people coming into this. Some interesting names as well, which, you know, they do quite a good job of stunt casting, I guess I would call it, for this. They've picked up a few interesting people along the way, and, you know, people like Sean Astin and people that have maybe only been there for 1 or 2 seasons, but they'd be quite good with the stunt casting in this. If you can't remember where we left Stranger Things, the Battle of Starcourt, again, spoilers, obviously, if you haven't watched season 4, but really, what are you doing if you haven't watched it by now? Battle of Starcourt, so the end of that, we saw the gang take down the Mind Flayer in a fabulous ending sequence, but apparently losing Hopper, played by David Harbour, in the process. Joyce, that's Winona Ryder's character, Will, Jonathan, and a now powerless 11 are all moving out of Hawkins and say a tearful goodbye to Mike, Dustin, Lucas, Max, and Nancy. Meanwhile, there is a cutaway in the snowy hills of a Russian wasteland. These group of Russians seem to be locked away with a captive Demigorgon and somebody they refer to as the American, which appears to be a very much alive Hopper, although we're not entirely sure how he got there. So the new season, we know, will explain a bit more about how and why Hopper is suddenly in Russia, having kind of vanished. And we also get a new horror beginning to surface in the US, although it doesn't specifically say Hawkins, but obviously Hawkins is going to be involved in some way. The new characters that they are introducing, these are series regulars. There's a guy called Jamie Campbell Bauer, who was in The Mortal Instruments, City of Bone, Sweeney Todd. He's playing Peter Ballard, who is a caring man who works as an orderly in a psychiatric hospital. Tired of the brutality he witnesses day after day, will Pete finally take a stand? Eduardo Franco, who's been in Butchmarked and The Binge, he plays Argyle, Jonathan's new best friend, a fun-loving stoner who proudly delivers delicious pizza pies for Surfer Boy Pizza, which is a great name. I love the names they've come up with some of these things. They feel very 80s, you know?
Yeah.
There's Joseph Quinn, who was in Catherine the Great and Howard's End, who's playing Eddie Munson, an audacious 80s metalhead who runs the Hellfire Club, Hawkins High School official D&D club, hated by those who don't understand him and beloved by those who do. Eddie will find himself in a terrifying epicenter of this season's mystery. So those three characters are going to be series regulars. We should be seeing quite a lot of them. Anybody stick out from that group?
I remember Jamie Campbell Bauer. I remember he's a really good actor. I'm again, embarrassingly, I left Stranger Things at the end of season 1.
Oh dear.
I keep doing these things. I should really try and pick up on the trends a lot sooner. But I always sort of like, I'm not going to watch that. And then a couple of months later, it's the biggest thing on television. And I'm like, oh, not again, Greg.
It is worth going back to because it's a phenomenal series. And I mean, certainly for somebody like me who grew up in the 80s as well, there's a lot of nostalgia floating around there. But I think, you know, the 80s nostalgia stuff I really love. In addition to those three, they've got 5 recurring roles. These include Sherman Augustus, who was in Into the Badlands and Westworld, as Lieutenant Colonel Sullivan, who is an intelligent, no-nonsense man who believes he knows how to stop the evil in Hawkins once and for all. Mason Dye, who is in Bosch and the Goldbergs, playing Jason Carver, who seems to be somebody that has it all. He's handsome, he's rich, he's a sports star, he's dating the most popular girl in school. But when a new evil threatens Hawkins, Jason's perfect world begins to unravel. Nikolai Jurico, who is in Genius and The Land of Blood and Honey portrays Yuri, who is a seedy and unpredictable Russian smuggler who loves bad jokes, cold hard cash, and a crunchy style peanut butter. And the legendary Robert Engel, who you'll know from being Freddy Krueger, probably more than anything else in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. He plays Victor Creel, the disturbed and intimidating man who is imprisoned in a psychiatric hospital for gruesome murder in the 1950s. And lastly, Tom Wishlakier, who you'll know from Game of Thrones as being the man that has no name. And he was also in the Jack Ryan series as well. He's playing Dimitri, a Russian prison guard who befriends Hopper. He's smart, cunning, and charming, but can he be trusted? We actually already saw a glimpse of Tom because they released a little trailer a few months ago and they didn't announce him, but you could spot him in the background in that. Back in February, when life was less weird and you could actually step outside without a mask. Again, with what I mean by stunt casting, they're quite good at sort of picking these big 80s icons and shoving them in things, just as kind of guest roles and recurring roles and stuff. So Robert Engel, I think, is a fabulous name to pick up, particularly playing a demented psychiatric patient.
I hope he doesn't get typecast.
Well, I think he's a bit past that by now, isn't he, really? But yeah, no, great horror legend. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how they use him in this. It looks really good. Next up, we have a quick note that the Last of Us series, which we mentioned a few months ago, HBO have picked that up to order now. So obviously based on the video game, it's from Craig Mazin, who was the person who created the multi-Emmy award-winning Chernobyl, and Neil Druckmann, who wrote the original Last of Us video game and Last of Us 2, and I think he was involved in Uncharted, I think was the other thing he was involved in as well. Great pair of people involved with the writing on it. I know you don't video game, but I mean, the Last of Us was one of the most cinematic video games ever released. They've released The Last of Us 2 as well. They're two of the biggest video games of all time. I think Last of Us 2 is holding record for the most sales this year. So I think having those two people involved, I mean, did you see Chernobyl eventually? I can't remember.
No, I didn't see that either. Embarrassing me, Dave.
Yeah, see, that's another thing that you need to watch, because that was superb. If you don't know the background of The Last of Us, of course, it takes place 20 years after a modern civilization has been destroyed. Joel is a hardened survivor who is hired to smuggle Ellie, a 14-year-old girl, out of an oppressive quarantine zone. What starts out as a small job soon becomes a brutal, heartbreaking journey as they both must traverse across the US and depend on each other for survival. It is sort of a zombie series. I mean, the zombies are kind of different. They're kind of mutated in different ways, but it is very much a sort of zombie horror series in that sort of genre. But I'm really intrigued to see what Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann do with this, because I think that's an amazing pair of writers teaming up together that are going to be in control of it. They've got great stuff to work with. It's HBO. This should be really, really good. So that'll be one to look out for. Don't know when that's going to land, but certainly one to look out for. HBO Max has also picked up a thing called DMZ, which is they picked it up as a limited series. It's based on a comic book. It's a 4-episode limited series, so I mean, it's very limited by limited series standards, because usually they're kind of 6 to 10 episodes, but this is only going to be 4 episodes. It's set in a near future where America is in the midst of a new civil war. The action takes place in New York City, more specifically the island of Manhattan, which has been turned into a demilitarized zone, aka the DMZ. As war rages between the remains of the federal government and secessionist free state armies, Alma Ortega, a female medic on the island, is trying day in, day out to help keep residents alive while also trying to find her lost son. In the process, she tries to prove a source of hope in an America that lost all sense of the idea and faces gangs, militia, warlords that control lawless no man's land. Throwing gasoline onto the flames of the conflict is Paco Delgado, who is the popular and deadly leader of one of the most powerful gangs in the DMZ. He wants to rule the new world and will stop at nothing to secure the outcome. So yeah, that's the setup for it. The cast they've already announced is Rosario Dawson, who you'll know from the upcoming Briar Patch series, which is going to go out on Alibi over here, and Defenders, of course, as well, the Marvel Netflix Defenders shows. She was in those. She's playing the nurse. Benjamin Bratt, who you'll know from Doctor Strange and Law and Order and things like 24 Live Another Day, he's playing Paco Delgado. They've also announced Hoon Lee from Warrior and Bosch, Freddie Meirez, who was in The L Word Generation Q, and Jordan Preston Carter, who was in something called The Haves and Has-Nots, are also starring in it as well. It's being adapted by Roberto Patino, who wrote on Sons of Anarchy and Westworld from the original comic book. He's also the showrunner on it as well. And Ava DuVernay, who did Selma and When They See Us, is directing the pilot episode as well.
It sounds dystopic, but it's yes. Ava DuVernay behind it. And she is known for really picking good content to put out there. I also like Rosario Dawson. I have liked her for years. She was in the musical Rent, film version. So yeah, I might. This comes on to Atlantic, which could be if they get
maybe.
That yeah, I would definitely want to watch this.
Hopefully it'll be one that comes on to Sky Atlantic, even if they don't pick it up and somebody else does, because it is a HBO Max series, so it doesn't mean that it'll necessarily go on to Sky. It is only 4 episodes, so there is a fair chance that somebody will pick it up, because it's a limited series, so it's not going to be particularly expensive for them to pick up. Mm-hmm. But, well, comparatively to picking up, like, you know, 24 episode season of something. Lastly, Greg Berlanti is back developing more superhero shows. The latest one for the CW is Wonder Girl. This is kind of an interesting mix of things. It's based on the DC character created by Jolie Jones. It's a 1-hour drama, follows a character called Yara Flor, who is a Latina dreamer who was born to an Amazonian warrior and a Brazilian river god, obviously. She learns that she's Wonder Girl and with her newfound power must fight the evil forces that would seek to destroy the world. Now, Wonder Girl is a name that's been used throughout DC history. The young Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, used it in the 40s and 50s. Donna Troy, who I think you'll probably know from Titans series, is probably the most well-known version of it. She was in the sort of 60s to the 90s. She was about Cassie Sandmark is a newer version of the character. She first appeared in 1996. Yara Flor is a new creation, so new that she hasn't actually appeared in the DC comics and didn't go into until next year, because they've got this run coming up called Future State, which sees some of the big DC characters, their mantles being taken over by some new heroes. So in the comic books, Yara Flor is actually going to be the new Wonder Woman rather than Wonder Girl. But for the TV series, which they like to mess around with these things, it's going to be Wonder Girl. It's coming from Dalian Rodriguez, who has previously worked on things like Ugly Betty, Lie to Me, and 90210, and Queen of the South, where she served as showrunner for the last few seasons. She's going to write and exec produce the series alongside the various Berlanti people. There's been an interesting shift with the DC comics recently, in that it used to be the case that we did used to get some characters that had been invented for the TV show, like John Diggle or Harley Quinn, in fact, was invented for the cartoon series, and they've become popular and then been folded into the comics. What we've seen both with Yara Flor and with Ryan Wilder, they've started to introduce them into the comics before they land on the TV series. Although they're new characters, they kind of synced them up together, so they're sort of landing around about the same sort of time. So there seems to be more communication between the comic book universe and the TV universe, which is quite nice. There was a bit of restructuring that went on in DC, and it seems that this is the outcome of it, that they're working more closely hand in hand, which is quite nice. As I said, Black Lightning is going, as we mentioned earlier, but this could potentially be a new one that adds to the Berlantiverse. Another interesting character. It's kind of an underseen area as a sort of Latina dreamer character, I think, could be quite interesting.
Now, where do we go in having too many? I still haven't finished Stargirl. I'm a little bit behind. I'm really enjoying it. I'm just taking a long time to get to the end of it. And it's just, I don't know. It depends if this gets picked up for a full take. You know, that's the other thing. I like the story behind it. I like that there's going to be some real alliance between the TV and comic. I'm not sure where this sits with me. I love Flash. Still my favourite. Yeah. And that's what I will sit with at the moment. But knowing me, I'll give it a try. And then you'll speak to me 24 episodes later and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Because the problem is, of course, because she hasn't yet been introduced in the comics, we don't know what her personality is like. We don't know anything about the character other than she is basically a young, different take on Wonder Woman. But we don't know much more about it than that, other than that. I think it's an interesting idea. Obviously, you know, we have got a Superman on the TV version, but they've been reluctant to sort of properly use any more of the Trinity, which is Batman and Wonder Woman. So, you know, this could be interesting. We'll see how this goes, whether it goes to series or not. I mean, it may or it may not. We don't know. I mean, it is on the CW, so we're assuming because it's Berlanti and it's listed as a CW show, it will probably be connected to the Arrowverse. But that may not be the case. We don't know at the moment, but we'll see. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Let's move on to some highlights for next week, or highlight as it is in this case. Highlights for next week on TV are somewhat lacking. It's very rare that we don't have really anything. There is one show for next week, which is The Magicians, which the fifth and final season is coming onto Amazon Prime on the 26th of November. That's basically the only thing in terms of new shows that's launching next week. I mean, this is September, October, November will be when we've had tons of stuff releasing. But of course, with everything being delayed in the US, a lot of the stuff that is releasing October, November over there is going to be pushed to January, February over here. It's fairly slow. I mean, it's not as if there isn't enough stuff out there to watch. I mean, we had quite a lot launch over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, it's rare we just have like one thing. So there is that. One advanced air date, which I did want to mention this week, just so you're aware of it. Raised by Wolves, not the British TV show, the big Ridley Scott sci-fi drama, has been picked up by Sky Atlantic and Now TV. That is going to drop on the 5th of December. That's coming at 9 p.m. on the 5th of December. It's going to start with a triple bill, although from the 5th of December at 2 a.m., it will drop on demand. So that'll be Sky On Demand and Now TV from 2 a.m. You can go on and you can go and download them, and they will all be up there. So if you want to watch that Ridley Scott sci-fi series, which got rave reviews in the US, it looks really interesting. It looks very different. It's one that I know a lot of people have been asking about, but Raised by Wolves, 5th of December, Sky On Demand, Now TV from 2 a.m. And then it is, if you don't want to go and download it, it's on Sky Atlantic from 9 p.m. as well. Definitely want to go and watch out for on the 5th of December. That's everything for this week. And unless you've got anything else you want to mention?
No, that's it. I'm looking forward also to the week after next. I know that Big Mouth is on its way back on Netflix, isn't it?
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to that coming back. Those are nice, easy, bingeable episodes that I could plow through in a week. So
yes, there is stuff coming up in December. And yeah, we've got big things as well, like The Expanse returning, Tin Star Liverpool is back. We've got the new Grand Tour thing. And then there will be a ton of stuff, I'm fairly sure, dropping in January, February. So, you know, the start of next year is going to be particularly crazy because that's when things usually start over here. But of course, everything's been delayed. So we haven't got dates for a lot of that stuff yet, but we do know that they will be coming at some point, very likely in January.
We're just a few weeks off of getting the big Radio Times Christmas edition and a big felt tip pen and sitting there circling things like I used to do when I was a child.
Yeah. Yes, yes, I remember it well. So, of course, the online version of the Radio Times, if you want to go and see when shows are coming back in the US and in the UK, you can go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest TV air dates. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.